Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
We're a small enough group that it feels weird to not be less formal, so I just felt like that's how I would start. God's peace and grace be with you, though. So, my favorite baseball player is Edgar Martinez. I don't know if you know who that is. Former Seattle Mariner designated hitter. I love Edgar Martinez. I have been a fan of his, as long as he played, because, you know, I was alive then and I followed the team. Some people have doubts about just, you know, how useful of a player he was because he was just a designated hitter, so he didn't play in the field, he just batted. Is everybody following me? I feel like I get the sense that you all know what I'm talking about. And so some people would say, well, he couldn't have been that great of a player because he didn't play in the field. But I am of the opinion that he was such a great batter that had there been no rule that would have allowed him to be a designated hitter, they would have put him on the field. Because he was good. He was really good. In fact, he was so good that the award they give out every year to the designated hitter for the Major League Baseball is named in his honor. The Edgar Martinez Outstanding Designated Hitter Award. I looked it up, that's what it's called. Edgar had he was a right-handed hitter, which is a huge disadvantage in baseball. Because if you look at the list of the best hitters in the game, they're almost all lefties. Because if you're a left-handed hitter, you have an advantage against a right-handed pitcher. And since most people are right-handed, it's advantageous to be a left-handed hitter. You follow that?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you might not know this, but of all the people who have ever played that game professionally, of all the right-handed hitters, Edgar has the second best on-base percentage in the last 70 years. And the fourth best in history. He's good. He's really good. 418 times out of every 1,000 times that he would come up to bat, he would get on base, which is outstanding. But you know what that also means? That also means that almost 6 times out of every 10 times he'd come up to bat, he would fail. He wouldn't get on base. And since he didn't play in the field, that was his only job, was to get on base, which means that more often than not, as amazing of a hitter as he was, as good as he was, he still failed more often than he succeeded at the one thing he was supposed to do on the field. Which is kind of funny. Because that's the thing about baseball, is it's about the process. It's not always about the results. The best players are gonna strike out. They're gonna fall short. They're going to not succeed more often than they are going to succeed, especially when it comes to batting. And so for them to be successful at what they do, they have to trust in the process more than in just the results themselves. Because if they focus on just the results, and if they change what they're doing every time they get up there, it isn't gonna work. If they fiddle with their stance every single time, I'm so stiff, I can't do this right now. If they change the way they hold the bat, if they change their approach every time they go up there and it didn't work, it's going to work even less. To be good at what they do, they have to trust the process and have a good process and practice it and know what they're doing. We are gathered together this evening to celebrate and remember the birth of a little baby about 2,000 years ago. And the birth of that child made no sense. You got an unwed mother, right? At least to start off with. This poor family, son of a carpenter, traveling across the land. And even when he's finally born, there's no room. So we have the whole story about the manger and everything. As he grows up, the life that Jesus will lead will make no sense to most people. He's an itinerant preacher. He travels roundabout, preaching in different places. Doesn't really have a stable job. You got to think that must have annoyed his mother. Has this small collection of devout followers who stick with him up until the very end and then bail. He finds himself crucified on a cross. Because that's what this whole thing's leading towards tonight, right? I mean, we're gathered together to celebrate Christmas, don't get me wrong, but we all know where this leads. It's going to lead down a road to a cross. But then it's going to lead to an empty tomb and to a promise from that. God's process makes no sense in this story. If you were to start from scratch on how you would do this, this is not how most people would go about it. Jesus will not be the king that the people are looking for. He won't be the form of Messiah that people are expecting. And yet, when everything is said and done, he will have this legacy. This legacy, as we talked to the kids earlier, of hope and love and joy and peace. It's that legacy that we're gathered together tonight for. It's that legacy that is the entire point to why this building is being used as a church. Is this legacy is the entire point to why there's even a role for someone like me to claim this title of pastor. The results were good. It was the process that didn't make any sense. Because that's how God works. I know it's a cliche, but God works in ways that we don't expect. And God works in places we don't expect. And just when we think we have it all figured out, it all gets spun on its head. And we find ourselves taking a 75-year-old congregation and moving it up the street. We find ourselves remodeling a building that once upon a time was a pool hall. Still got the kegs in the basement to prove it. I really got to get rid of those at some point. It's on the list. I just haven't taken the time. I'm sure there's a deposit to be picked up somewhere. We find ourselves in this middle of a, you know, pseudo-urban village, surrounded by commercial businesses. We got the pub next door and the pot shop beyond that, flanked by the other one. Because God's process does not always make sense, but the end result is so good. The end result is so good. The whole point to Jesus' life, death, and resurrection was for us to remember that we are a part of something bigger than our own little lives. That we are a part of something special. Something that has been going on since time immemorial. And sometimes we try to distract ourselves by finding other things to use in place of God to do that. Lately, I've been trying to use the Hawks at times. That's a mistake. I assume they lost today. I didn't catch the end of the game. That was ridiculous.
They lost.
Well, they lost the first quarter when they made that ridiculous jump. That first drive was a joke. But that's temporary. It's a game. It's a distraction. It's fun for a little while. But in the greater scheme of things, it doesn't matter. What does matter is this promise that God has given us of hope, of love, of joy, and of peace. And more importantly, the promise and the command to share that with others. Being a Christian is not easy. Actually holding to the gospel is not easy. It's not comfortable. It is not comfortable to preach Christ crucified. It is not comfortable to remind people that we are called to love one another, even when we don't like each other. It is not comfortable to remind people in power that they are not to abuse that power and to abuse those who don't have it. It is not comfortable and it is not easy to be a person of faith. But that's what we do. Because the process doesn't always make sense. But the results are so good. On this night and every, may you find yourself blessed with the peace, the joy, the love, and the hope of Christ. Each and every day. Amen.